dito sa What the F, imbes na magmura, pag-uusapan natin ang mga maiinit na issue.
Bubusisiin at iintindihin natin. Mahirap ng maloko.
Makinig sa What the F?
Welcome back to What the F Podcast. I'm your host, Chin Samson. In our previous episode, we spoke to Rajesh Paul and Prati Tuladhar, journalists from Malaysia and Nepal, and talked about the challenges that women journalists face. We continue that conversation today.
Are there instances when the women journalists have proven themselves more than capable and then the guys sort of treat them differently because they're insecure? Because they're better, they show that they're better.
You know, when I took over the position as the editor, right, a few did. I mean, it's hard to say because they don't say it that they are threatened or, you know, but a few left. A few did leave the desk. I can only assume maybe they don't like my leadership as a woman, or, you know, or maybe they just didn't like me, or they didn't feel uncomfortable with the new person taking charge. But I lost a few after I took over.
I actually have a personal experience related to that question. So I think maybe I can just add. In my late 20s, I was leading my desk. And I think I was one of the very few women who've had an opportunity to do that, to lead a desk, but also in my late 20s. And this was a time when Nepal was going through civil war. It was a really crucial time in Nepal's history to be doing journalism because we had the civil war, and the civil war was coming to an end. And then we had the peace process. So I led the desk for 4 years as the head. And then after 4 years, so they brought in somebody from the print who joined this team where I had been working as the leader of that team. And then when they brought him in, they said, we are going to replace your position with him. And when I asked them, like, why? Because I'd been leading for 4 years, they said, because he's older than you. His background was sport. He'd been on the sport desk. He'd never done politics, but had been doing politics already by then. But I was simply told, because he's older than you, we're going to make him the lead now on. And of course, it didn't make sense. And in the role that I was in at that time, and I guess also because I was much younger, I couldn't really do much about it. But of course, eventually I found out there was nepotism, and his father was an ambassador, so he had very strong links. And, you know, those things also make a difference. But these things do happen. I think women become displaced, even if they're capable, because there are these cultural norms as well, sometimes as simple as someone being like older than you.
It is true that women do become displaced, whether it's based on cultural norms or simply it's just straight out sexism. And sometimes I feel like women are not just displaced, but forced to not even take up space because of their own personal experiences with regards to, let's say, sexual harassment and the shame that comes along with having gone through it, which I wanted to pivot to our next question, which is that, for context, women journalists globally report a low rate of sexual harassment in the workplace. But we all know that this doesn't necessarily mean that it's not happening. Not because it's not being reported, it's not happening. Do you see this in the spaces where you work? And if you do, why do you think there is a low rate of reporting being done?
Over the two decades that I've been with the sports desk, there have been only one incident that I know of in my desk itself, and immediate action was taken. That means this former colleague of mine was brave enough to report it, and my boss was brave enough to take action against it. So in that sense, that this could be about 15 to 18 years ago. So even then, I think that the company that I'm in, they're very particular about this. They take this matter very seriously. Having said that, I also had a friend from another organization where it was totally different, where she had to leave because of the pressure that she felt from the colleagues around her after a report was made. You know, she had to leave, not the other way around. So there was a mix in that sense.
I spent close to 14 years working in the same newsroom. And it's almost like, because I started as a as an intern and then, you know, so it was many, many years of my life just like evolving within the newsroom. So the first year I joined, I reported a case of sexual harassment against myself and this other colleague of mine by an editor. And this used to be the time of cut-to-cut editing. Every time we were in this editing room with this editor, a visual editor who used to work with us on the production, he would always have his hands on our thighs. And then because this colleague and me, we happened to share this experience together, we realized, okay, so he's doing this to more than one person, means it's not me who's misreading the signals, right? Like this is really happening. I reported against him because my friend was a bit, my colleague, this other girl, she was younger than me and she was a bit scared because she was only 18. And she was just starting out as an intern as well. But then after we complained, he was suspended for 2 weeks. And then he came back to work. And I always felt like that wasn't enough of action against somebody who's the perpetrator. And for the next 14 years of my life, or let's say 13 years, when I worked in that organization, he was there every day, right? At the same workplace. And for me, it was traumatic to have to be in the same organization as him for so many years because there was this tension in the air every time we crossed each other or we were in the same space because he would also make these snide remarks and say, oh, so you're the one who brought the case against me, you know? And so it became really difficult for me, even though I did work in the same space with him for so many years. So I think most of the time, even when we have experienced harassment, women do not report it because it becomes really difficult and also awkward and uncomfortable for us to continue working in the same space with the same people because we also know that in most cases, action is not taken against these people, right? And in many cases, we've also seen things actually get worse for somebody who's brought up a case against someone like Rajesh mentioned earlier, how this person who reported had to leave the organization and not the perpetrator, you know? So I think in many cases, women do not bring up cases because they're scared. One of, I think, being called out because usually women are also called out and the blame is put on them for being responsible for provoking, right, the situation. Sometimes they're also scared of losing their jobs because I think it's true for many women who work as journalists that they move out of their homes, go to a different city and mostly live alone or with friends and work as journalists where they do not have the kind of security they need to continue doing that kind of job. In many cases, also because we are really scared of not being able to continue working as journalists or like forwarding ourselves in that career because sometimes you become maligned for bringing a case like that against somebody, especially if that person is powerful. And then you feel like you've destroyed your own chances of moving forward in your career and probably your social life as well. So I think there are multiple reasons why all the women journalists are the ones who are also like the flag bearers. We write about everyone's issues, right? But we are the ones who don't really talk about ourselves because there are all these difficulties that we encounter in our own situations, I think.
I could imagine that personally you had these thoughts as well before you actually filed that report about the editor who had been harassing you. It's thrilling to hear and see parallels in my own country. I remember the interview we did with Nini. You would remember Nini from our workshop and because she was one of our guests in the podcast episode we had before this. We talked to Nini and another veteran woman journalist, Ami Kabusaw in Southern Philippines, where they also mentioned that there is a stigma that you are usually blamed for being harassed. There's a stigma that it's your fault. That's why you're being harassed. And that's why a lot of women are very hesitant to share their experience. Or sometimes women don't take the steps to report because after they report, what would even be done about it? Similar to your experience, Prati, Nini and Ami mentioned that there's a low rate of action being taken against harassers. Usually they're just reprimanded or they're just transferred to a different office, but still within the same organization, whether it's within your organization or it's a source who harassed you. And that's not really reassuring to the victim. And they mentioned that that's why it's necessary for newsrooms to have policies. But the problem is sometimes there's not really any follow through on those policies. Do you have any policies in your own newsrooms to address sexual harassment?
We do, but it is not like an elaborate policies that speaks about 10 points on sexual harassment. Probably it's just like two-liner but it is there in place. And I think in my organization, it's very clear if any such thing has happened, they have a very clear process on who to go to. In fact, the person who makes the report is protected. So the name doesn't come out in the beginning and until that person is very comfortable in that sense. So I think we have a very good mechanism in place. Even to the extent, like a whistleblower, if you say so, your identity is protected. So, you know, unless this is being brought to court and there is the other side is against it or something like that. But at the company level, I think it's handled in a very delicate way. If I may add, it may be because there are many women leaders in the company. I think that is one of the plus point.
I think that makes all the difference, really. I think one of the reasons why it's so pervasive, the problem is because we don't have enough women in the leadership. I think women do most of the time look out for other women, especially younger women, in when it comes to incidents like sexual harassment. And for me, from my experience, because I went from working in a newsroom where I spent these 14 years, where there were no sexual harassment, anti-sexual harassment policies in place, right? And I went from working there where I feel like I was always working in an extremely unsafe environment. As I got older, it just became easier to stand up for myself or call people out when they were doing something that was not right, and also call them out when I saw men, male colleagues, doing something that was not right to a female colleague. And I think as you get older, as women, we find that we're more confident about these things. I mean, I actually saw like the stark difference between having policies that protect you in place and not having them when I moved to BBC, because I worked for 3 years with the BBC, and BBC has very strong policies in place. And it was suddenly a very different kind of environment to work in, because I think the moment you're hiring somebody new in the organization and the person knows that there are these policies in place that safeguard you, then it means that if you're somebody who is a perpetrator, you will be very careful and you will not misbehave with people you work with, you know. But if you're somebody who just work like walking into the organization anyway, the institution anyway, it also means that you feel protected because you know that if something happens, there are these policies in place that will support you. And that if there are whistleblowing policies, it's even better, right? So I think it's really, really important to have them in place, because I think safety is also, it's first psychological, right? And I think with policies, that's what it provides us.
That's a really great point, Prati, that, you know, sometimes we may be overlooking that, you know, it's common sense that you should not be harassing people. But there is a difference when you enter an organization and know that the organization has clearly laid out policies against these, like against sexual harassment. You talked about safety, and that's where I want to bring us next, which is a conversation about safe spaces. A common thread that weaves together Rajesh, Prati, and myself is a workshop that we all joined last year in Indonesia, in which the topic was the safety and protection of women journalists in the region. In particular, we spoke about safe spaces as one of the topics. So for our listeners, just so we're all on the same page, a definition of a safe space by the United Nations is that It's a formal or informal place where women and girls feel physically and emotionally safe. As Prati mentioned earlier, I liked how she described it. Safety is psychological. Well, safety is also, apart from the obvious physical safety, it is also psychological. The United Nations adds that the term safe refers to the absence of trauma, excessive stress, violence or fear of violence, or abuse. For Prati and Rajesh, are there efforts to create safe spaces for women working in media in your countries? And what do they look like if you have some?
I think that process of creating space has already begun in Nepal, and it's really nice to see that. And most of it has come from women journalists who have experienced harassment. And some of these exist in the form of testimony, where they've written about their experiences of harassment in the newsroom, where they've called out people, most of the time editors and colleagues who have harassed them, because they serve as a warning to others, you know. And I think it also ensures safe space in the sense that it kind of validates their experience and lets them know that it's okay for you to talk about these terrible experiences you've had, because you're not alone in feeling that way and experiencing those terrible experiences. With the start of the Me Too movement, there was also a movement in Nepal where many women journalists started writing about their own experiences in the newspapers they work in, or, you know, online or wherever they're working. We also saw that there was a rise in voices from male colleagues as well, who were supporting the way they were coming forward to talk about it. And I think in order for us to create safe spaces in the newsrooms, it can not be done by women journalists alone, even if it's senior women journalists trying to protect the younger ones, right? It always has to be that we ensure that our male colleagues are understanding of what we're experiencing and how what we've suffered because of the kind of treatment we've experienced. And they have to be willing partners in ensuring that the working space is safe for all genders. And it's not even just about women or girls, you know, it's also about like all the other genders that come into work in that new space, because we've also had so many incidents, I think, where someone who does not identify as within the gender binary has also experienced multiple experiences of harassment, right? So I think it's basically about protecting and respecting that individual space where every individual, regardless of what gender we identify as, is safe physically and therefore mentally to continue doing the work we do. Because unless we're mentally in a good place, because we're also like physically safe, we cannot do the work we do properly, right? So I do think in Nepal that has begun in its own way. Because also with my latest working experience, where I work for Nepali Times, and it's a newsroom where almost everyone, it's mostly girls working in that team. And it's been a very different kind of experience. And I've also experienced, like, it's a very safe environment. I've never felt physically threatened in that newsroom where I worked for a couple of years during COVID. I only work for them as a contributing writer now, but it was nice to see how from that traumatic experience I had in my late teens to early 20s, you know, I was finally able to work in a space where I do not have to fear that somebody will touch me inappropriately while I'm doing my job or say something inappropriate to me.
Do you think that people are now more sensitive, not necessarily just the men? They're more sensitive given that there is more talk about the issue of harassment and, you know, equality in the workplace. And does this translate to a better working environment?
Absolutely. And I think all things begin with conversations, right? And I think communication has to be at the root of every change that we try to bring in. And because we are now talking about these problems, I think it's also compelling men who in the past did not think about these things to think about it. Because some of us also come from cultures where masculinity is the normal, it's the norm, and where men saying certain things to women that are actually sexist is not seen as sexist. Like, there is no understanding of how that could be sexist. So I think to build an understanding of what is right and wrong and what is appropriate or inappropriate does create that space, I think, for men to think about and to act accordingly.
There is no safe space that you can see physically. Okay, this is the spot or this is the place that I feel safe in that sense. But so I'm wondering, when I was like under stress with a lot of situation when I was in, who was the person that I ran to? Surprisingly, it was my mentor, my former boss who was there, that he was the one that I could talk to about these challenges that I went through. And he was the one who was telling me, you can overcome this. You are able to do it. Sky is the limit, you know. And then there was another lady who came into the picture later. So it grew. I think the safe space grew along the way. And I like how the way Celine put it. I didn't even realize that I'm now doing it to the younger ones who comes, assuring them that if you go through this, then this is something that you can count on or depend on, you know, that I'm here, that I can assist you in a way. So it has grown because of what I have experienced. So I'm now able to provide that a space for them.
Actually, I like the point that you raised, Rajesh and Prati, about you're not trying to put women above other genders. You're trying to make it an equal workplace. You're trying to make the interactions within the newsroom or even outside the newsroom make it so that everyone is treated decently. Everyone is treated like a human being. That is what we're asking. Is that too much to ask? We recognize, unfortunately, that these issues that we're talking about is more often than not a shared experience among women across generations. Having spent years in the industry, what kind of support would you have wanted to have had earlier in your career, Rajesh and Prati? Is there a particular experience that comes to mind where you think, oh, I wish that would have been handled differently?
I have ran to the toilet many times crying. Over the years, I wish there were a place where I could hide during the early days when I was still raw, still building. Of course, now my skin is like an elephant skin. Nothing can, you know, but those days. So I can imagine when a younger one comes, that beginning part is always the hardest. If there is a community where they can be open and, you know, whatever that they share, it's not going to go out or, you know, that they're going to feel small or being ridiculed for crying. a support group in that sense that they know, these are the people that I can count on will be good, I think.
And if I can just add, one, I wish there had been someone who was older than me, like an older woman friend in the newsroom that I could confide in, which did not exist for me because I started working at a time when journalism in Nepal was very male dominated at the top tier. And I wish there were policies in place so that women who worked alongside me were safe. I mean, there's still no policies in place, even now. But then at least now there's dialogue. So I wish that, and of course, a support group like Rajesh said, I think that did not exist then, but now they do. And so I'm glad that's changing.
I have my own reflections as well, because in the Philippines, I have been participating in a series of workshops. It's led by ACFJ, actually, which is another common thread that binds us together in this room. It's usually among senior women journalists, but there's also been a lot of integration of conversations between senior women journalists as well as younger journalists. And we see that there also haven't been safe spaces here in our country or in the Philippines. We see are senior women journalists shedding tears in these workshops. And we see women journalists telling each other that, I've known you for decades. We've covered events. We've covered administrations throughout the years. But this is the first time that I'm hearing that you've been carrying this burden. And I know that it could be emotional. And I like what, just because of the weight that you have been carrying all these years, that you think that you're forced to be tough just because you have to maintain your position here in the industry that you're working in. I think it was Rajesh who mentioned that you wish there was a support group where you could cry without being judged. And I'm glad to see sort of that there is a space being created now in the Philippines where you could cry without being judged. You could share your experience without being judged. And you're among fellow women journalists who understand. And I think that's important. That's, as Prati mentioned earlier, communication is really important in what we're trying to achieve here. As one of I think it's our final question, as women in leadership positions and as mentors now to younger journalists, is there anything you are trying to change in the culture now? And if there is, could you tell us a little bit about it?
For me, when like I said, I have three, one just left, women reporters in my team, and they are given the same choice. If they want to cover football, go ahead. You're most welcome to go and cover football. There is no, okay, it's only specified for this group or seniors or juniors. If you're ready, you're thrown into everything. So there is a, we rotate, you know, everybody, of course, journalists, we have beats that we cover, which also helps that reporter as well, but we rotate, giving everybody an opportunity to be a journalist that is not limited by certain interests, you know, but you are exposed to everything. So I try to change that, giving that's the one that comes in very easily on top of my plate ahead at the moment.
So the first message I have for anyone who's younger than me and anyone who is a woman and is working as a journalist, I want to ask them to have one another's back as women, because I think that's the first thing we need to do for one another. And we are not one another's competition. Like Rajesh said earlier, we are our own competition, right? Our only competition is to do better than what we've been doing. And so from having one another's back, I feel like that's the foundation of where it has to go. And what am I doing to make a change? Whenever I'm working with younger women journalists who I'm close to, who come to me for advice or support, I always try to have their back as much as I can. And I also tell them to stand up for themselves, especially in awkward incidences, like in the event of harassment or whatever. I tell them that they have to call out. If I'm present in scenarios where a situation like that is unfolding, I've always done the calling out. And as an older woman, it comes easier to me. Recently, there was an incident where I was with my colleague and there was this man who's actually a celebrity, but also a source, was trying to flirt with her. So I called him out. You know, sometimes you just have to call certain behaviors out. And I think that can be one of the ways of sort of alerting people. But also the other way I do it is if I'm aware of someone approaching a source who I think tends to be flirtatious or can be somebody who has the predator kind of nature, then I flag it to them and I tell them to make sure they're not alone with this person when they're doing the interview, or they find ways to protect themselves during those communications, conversations, or however they do the interview. So that, but also there's this group on WhatsApp in Nepal, which we call it Women in Nepal's Newsrooms. So it's like a support group where if something we need to share happens, then we put it in there and we go to each other for sources, phone numbers, but we also go to each other for support with other kinds of issues. So these are some of the things that are happening here.
Wow, I love that you have a whole WhatsApp group dedicated to women journalists.
I think I may want to do that, Patty. I may want to. We have a few women sports journalists. Maybe I will put them all together in a group. I can, call the lead, for it.
I love that. And to share also from the Philippines, so we have been trying to form this group as well. It's called We Move, or the Movement for the Safety and Protection of Women Journalists. We are trying to start these conversations among women journalists in different regions in the Philippines. And each time I see that I'm glad to see that there is solidarity forming among women. It's sad to hear stories every time about how difficult it has been. But I am glad that we are all banding together, working towards the same goal of recognizing these experiences, honoring these experiences, and then trying to move forward, trying to create ways how to avoid these things happening again to them and to the younger generation. I feel like we could spend another hour or another day even talking about this topic or another workshop. True. But I wanted to thank our guests again for dedicating a part of their day today with us at Verifiles to talk about this issue. And I wanted to thank you for your bravery and for willing enough, being open enough to share your own experiences with us. I know that sometimes it could be difficult to recall those experiences. And I just wanted to say, on behalf of Verifiles, thank you again to Rajesh and to Prati.
Thank you. And we have to keep talking about it, because the more you talk about it, the more you get people to think if they're not thinking of it yet, or if they need to be more aware. Because I know that there are people who would rather just, turn it off, because probably, one, it hasn't happened to them yet. So they need to know that it does happen, and that for them to be able to prevent something similar happening to them, then they have to listen, and there has to be people who are telling these stories. So thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you, Alma. Thank you. Thank you, Celine, and also Prati. I enjoyed the discussion as well. So the take home today, I think it's whoever is listening, you are not alone. And together we can do many great things. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Celine and Rajesh and Elma. I think this was such an interesting conversation, but also important. But I really want to thank you from the cockles of my heart for asking us to be part of this conversation, also happening at such an important week of the year, because we are talking about Women's Day, right? And I also feel this is a conversation that needs to keep happening, so that we're always thinking about how to make things better, like Alma said. So thank you all.
Thank you so much. And I hope you have a great rest of your evening, everyone.
You too. Thank you. Great seeing you again, Selena and Rajesh.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. I hope to see
Bye-bye.
You all again very soon.
Okay.
Yes. Bye-bye. Take care, ladies. Yes.
Dito sa What the F podcast, walang murahan, usapang facts lang. Pakinggan kami sa YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcast at Apple Podcast.